participated in some kind of service learning travel? You can show the hands. Where have you traveled to? Guatemala?
Alberta.
Okay, Alberta. Anywhere else?
Montreal.
So one of the things you probably know is that you learn and gain so much more than you give through these experiences. And one of the things I was fortunate to learn more about when I traveled to Haiti in 2012 on a Unitarian Universalist Service Committee trip was some amazing use of the popular education model. So, who wants to share what popular education is? Yeah.
There's just some aspects of that. I know it's more about like trying to like give people a space to share and sort of be the leaders and bring up what are the issues that actually resonate with the community mm-hmm. you're working with. So it's less of a top-down approach and more mm-hmm. participatory.
Yeah. Anybody else?
Yes, you're doing it.
Still a bit of modeling. Yeah, so, you know, there's obviously a lot to it, but, you know, generally the concept that there is so much knowledge and wisdom in the room right here and in communities that are struggling to overcome poverty and injustice, that those resources are really present and people know a lot of what they need and have a lot of what they need to do. So that said, what do we know about Haiti? A lot of things that are in the news, popular conceptions. That's kind of
poverty.
Yeah. The poorest country in the Western Hemisphere is one fact that many people know. What else do we know about Haiti?
Ineffective government.
What's that?
Ineffective
government. Speak French. What else do they speak? Haitian Creole, which is a full language with its own grammar and what people speak at home for the most part, but all government programs, school is in French. A lot of training programs are in French. A lot of NGOs coming in do their stuff in French. So one of the things I learned about was the role of the French language as an oppressor in Haiti. History of that. There's some hurricanes.
There's some earthquakes.
Yeah, earthquake in 2010, which is what prompted the USC to look into partner relationships there.
A lot of what goes on there is the legacy of the fact that they have slave
people. Yes.
And the European countries did not.
Very important point. Thank you, Toe. So, yeah, world's oldest black republic. One of the oldest republics in the Western Hemisphere. First successful slave revolt. Free nation of former slaves in 1793. So what do you all think our dear founding fathers here in the fledgling U.S. thought about that? They're a little bit nervous. Yeah. Haiti did not receive U.S. diplomatic recognition until 1862. And yes, Tom mentioned that and the economic fallout from that whole process is a big, big factor in everything that's happened since. Haiti did also actively assist the independence movements of many Latin American countries. And there's, so much history that, I only delved into a little bit, but as part of the trip, we got a lot of homework or pre-work readings and things that I learned a little bit at school, but not so much. So, definitely encourage people to,
I would like to say, one thing that strikes out is that there's been a paucity of news since Papa Doc was put down. Mm-hmm. Another dictator goes down, but then you never know what falls.
Yeah.
I would appreciate being kind of brought up to date. In fact, I can't even remember the year Papa Doc was removed from
I don't remember either. Yeah, I think.
But we don't get much news from the press. Even the best press, New York Times, isn't pretty much from Haiti.
Yeah, we don't get a lot of international news period here. And again, I think, you know, we do hear some of the negative things, and there is also a lot of hope, which is mostly what I'm going to talk about today. We mostly hear the bad news, and I, you know, I suspect that in the outpouring of support after the earthquake, a lot of donors like me gave with the thought of temporarily alleviating suffering. We didn't necessarily expect to lift anyone out of poverty, let alone transform the country, which has so much weight of history. It's hard to imagine changing these deeply rooted systems of power and oppression. It's hard to imagine restoring a depleted environment to the point where it could provide a decent living to millions of people, ensuring that the inherent wealth and dignity of each is respected. Nonetheless, I went to Haiti in search of hope that these things were possible, and that is exactly what I found, and mostly what I'm going to talk about. It's not to gloss over the realities of a place where 80% of people live in poverty on less than $2 a day, and two-thirds have no formal jobs. But I think the stories of hope and courage and resilience are, you know, this incredible, effective grassroots organizing that's been going on by Haitians. So these are the stories that we're less likely to hear. And I think it's critically important that our image of this country and its people include the ways they're raising their own voices and leading change in inspirational ways for all of us. So the USC partner organization that we stayed and worked with and learned from is called the Mouvement Paysan Papay, MPP, the Papay Peasant Movement. It was founded in 1973 with the goal of unifying and organizing the peasants and rural workers of Haiti to promote them culturally and economically. Within the first 8 years, they started their own savings and credit union, a multi-sector agricultural cooperative, and a women's movement that organizes for gender equality. After the 2010 earthquake, they welcomed urban refugees with open arms. The co-op donated land to build several eco-villages, and farmers donated their seeds to feed the newcomers at the expense of being able to plant the next season. This is a story of the strength and resilience that comes from almost 40 years of organizing, that prepared these communities to act from abundance in the face of scarcity. Our group learned from the director, Siobhan, who talked about the earthquake as a unique opportunity to think about how to rebuild, to live into a dream of Haiti where everyone can live well, have healthy food, enough to share. The cooperative is made up of about 4,012 member groupements. 1,200 of those are women's groupements, women's groups. The groupements pool funds to send people to the hospital, pay for funerals. Each member contributed the amount needed to buy a sack of cement to build their new community center. Trainings are done in Creole instead of French, which makes a huge difference. And as I mentioned, popular education methods are woven throughout. One example we saw was a story told through pictographs, where members of the group were invited to tell the story, show them the picture, and then discuss the meanings behind it. Another method is a lot of singing, which is right up my alley. One of the best experiences of the trip of my life was an evening we spent hanging out on the porch of the guest house where we stayed. A group of MPP women stopped by. They heard us singing during our evening reflection. They shared us a Haitian song, and we responded with another UU song, and we went back and forth that way for a while. So, Kite nous chante. Let's sing. I'm going to teach you another song, short one that I learned from one of the women organizers that we worked with. So again, I'll sing, and you can sing that. It goes, me connen fosse, continuez vite pour Haïti, continuez vite pour Haïti. Just repeats that. Me connen fosse, continuez vite pour Haïti. Call them for say, call them for say. see you one more time. Golden Force, Golden Force, Contine Vite, O.I.E.T.
So what
we were singing? Saying, we know we have this power and strength to create change. We're going to continue to fight to struggle for Haiti. One example of this living hope is the home garden of Maxen, an MPP youth leader. His inspired success in improving soil productivity and thus family income and well-being through creative and organic methods represents more than a single story of someone making a positive change. Because this change grew from and continues through a mature and sophisticated system of community organizing. And because this young farmer connects his personal actions to the larger political struggle for food sovereignty, I truly believe it represents a movement. It was one of the homes and gardens that we got to tour and visit and learn from this young man who has been implementing these really effective methods in his home and his farm. As a food grower, I learned a lot from him. Another example of hope stirring in Haiti is seen in the MPP cooperatives, which are not just agriculture production, but also value-added processing. These co-ops craft jams and peanut butter and honey, and I'm sure more by now. I got to bring some home. I also have a background in cooperatives, and 2012 was the International Year of Cooperatives. The Twin Pines logo is on a lot of products from co-ops around the world, the kind of universal co-op symbol. And, you know, bringing home those jars with that Twin Pines logo connected a system of equal shared investment and reward that created those products to cooperatives of all kinds around the world. So I was really honored to learn from Haitians who are building the kind of cooperative economy, that multi-sector co-op where, you know, from the growing, to the production, to the selling, to the banking, everyone is investing in and benefiting equally from that economy. That's the kind of thing that I would like to see in our corner of the world here. Let's talk about the eco-villages for a moment that I and my temporary groupman of UUs contributed a small amount of sweat to. One important point is that both MPP members and the refugees from Port-au-Prince who were paid to build the homes in the eco-villages so that our modest volunteer labor was not displacing construction jobs, as is sometimes the case. So the eco-villages have farms and gardens with micro-drip irrigation powered by solar pumps that will keep them growing through the dry season. And some of these solar pumps use solar panels that were made at MPP's own workshop, so we got to tour. A lot of economic development going on that's being driven by the community and is sustainable on a scale that, you know, they can get those parts and maintain them. You know, if something breaks down, they've got the workshop right there. Just one more beacon from my short time in Haiti was the joy and human connection I found with my fellow EU travelers and the Haitians we worked and ate alongside. We got a little, you know, the story from the clowning of that sense of that joy too. I discovered the power of spontaneous song and dance to cross language barriers. I saw incredible resilience, generosity, humor, love, and faith. As I reconnected with my own UU faith, I had been away from the church for a while at that point, but I grew up in it. This trip was part of that reconnection and the space that it created in my life for balancing social justice action with reflection, with those morning and evening circles and weaving those parts of life together. I was blessed to be witnessing the community bonds in Haiti during that time. They are strong enough to mobilize members to action and flexible enough to welcome newcomers. MPP calls their organizers animators, animatores y animatrices, which brings to mind the waking the community up to its own potential and sparking it with new life. In returning home, my hope has have been to be more of an animatrice than an activist, waking people like me to the hope Haiti has for itself and to offer to the rest of us. Finally, I want to make a note that I brought some Haitian food for the potluck from the till, from Juke Leju and Food Cart on Alberta and 15th. And their business helps to support a school in Haiti, so that's another reason to check them out. Merci, Anpil. Thank you very much.